Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
This is our weekly question and answer podcast. So thank you for all your questions. And if you are inspired to send us questions or feedback, you know the address. It's 2matts@tnepublishing.com. But let's get straight in. Matt, first question.
Given the recent success of Geert Wilders, who's the Prime Minister presumptive in the Netherlands, Giorgio Meloni in Italy, and the Swedish Democrats, why do so many progressives support proportional representation? That's from James Hansen. Thanks, James.
So this is on the basis that these are fairly far-right divisive figures who have been empowered by proportional representation.
Yes.
So it's a good question, isn't it? I mean, there is a flip side to the proposed benefits of PR.
And I have to say that every time I see Nigel Farage, I think about PR a bit.
Wait, what did they top out? It was something like 8% of the vote or something like
that. Yes, in general election, but they won the European Brexit Party won the European elections, which was one of the big moments for Theresa May's departure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is no question that proportional representation, for all its merits, does completely change the nature of the game.
Because if they'd have got, if UKIP had got their 8% under, say it was a straight system of proportional representation, they'd have had 50-odd seats in Parliament.
Yes, and they would almost certainly, I mean, there would have been by now, I think, a Conservative UKIP stroke Brexit coalition.
Yeah, and there will be people all over the land saying, well, good, that's called democracy, boys.
Yes, you know? I mean, that's the problem, is that the honest truth is that most people's attitudes towards proportional representation is dictated by who they want to be in power.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, we all talk about the justice behind the system, but the truth is that the real issue behind PR is that the progressive vote has historically been split between Labour and the Lib Dems, and so a lot of votes get lost.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have to say that although I completely see the point, I mean, this is as an illustration of that, I completely see the arguments of PR, and I've often found it attractive. The current sort of political climate is one that seems to favour the emergence of quite extreme and quite sort of pop-up political forces, which I'm not absolutely sure is the ideal setting in which
it also seems
PR.
I mean, maybe it's just coincidence, but it also seems to favour personality-based politics over kind of policy-based politics.
Well, what you don't have to do, you have to build a coalition once you've become the biggest single party or one of them. But what you don't have to do when you're campaigning in the election is look for a coalition. You just target your far right voters, and so that's a real issue, I think.
Where really would you put Farage, just as a side? How would you describe Farage naturally in terms of his politics? Hard right, far right?
I think he's hard right.
Yeah.
I mean,
not far right though. That would be too much.
No, right? I mean, he's not far right because, as far as I'm aware, he's never shown any tendency towards, the kind of authoritarianism and dismantling of the state that we've focused with that. But certainly on Islam, net zero, obviously the EU, he's very much in that space.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thank you, James, for your question. Hope that goes some way towards answering it. Next question, please. Will there ever come a time when someone on the left declares how many immigrants are enough and how many are too much? PJ Maloney. Thank you, PJ. And you've noted in parenthesis underneath, right wing but not fascist. Well, we'll be the judge of that, PJ.
I think we will.
No, and you're not fascist, clearly. It's a very sensible question.
It is a very sensible question.
What do you think?
I hope not is the answer, because I think that caps on migration are ridiculous and economically illiterate. And we live in a country where, although there's been constant attempts to suggest this is not the case, growth and prosperity have depended for a very long time upon flexible approaches to migration. And one of the things that's happened since the post-Brexit government has tried to crack down on not just illegal immigration, but also, but now increasingly legal migration, which I think is going to be one of the big issues of the next few years, is that employers are finding it incredibly difficult to supply the labour market. And I'm in favour of immigration on lots of levels, but just sort of at a base level, you want public services, you want fruit picked, you want, you know, the service economy to work. You have to have a very flexible approach to migration. That is the grown-up approach in a modern nation state. And what I actually wish is that progressive parties would make that case.
That's right. Where it needs to be fought.
Yeah. I wish the Remain campaign had, instead of sort of shying away from immigration, had said, actually, this is why. Yeah. You know, if you really want more hospitals, more spent on the hospitals, you know, more money to be taxed, you know, you have to have quite a lot of immigration.
If there was any honesty in politics, the side of that bus would have said 350 million more for the NHS each week by opening borders and letting more people come in to make the economy stronger, because we're seeing the absolute diminution of the economy because our borders are cramped, you know.
The NHS is not on its knees. I think COVID didn't help, but it's not on its knees because of strikes.
No, that's right.
It's on its knees because there are not enough people in key jobs, and this government is promising to make it harder. And Labour, I'm afraid, is running scared on this.
Yeah, and the other thing I think is worth saying is just how poisonous the effect of right-wing media is in this conversation.
Yes.
By constantly telling people over and over again, this is a huge problem that's destroying Britain.
Yeah.
You know, and people going, well, it must be, you know. And the truth is, it isn't. I do accept that there are places in Britain where the nature of towns or villages has been fundamentally changed, and I accept it's people's right not to like that. But on a bigger scale, there's no way that you could argue sensibly that a chokehold on immigration is a panacea for the UK's problems.
Quite the opposite.
Exactly the opposite.
Quite the opposite. I mean, I think you can have a sensible argument about integration. You can have a sensible argument about distribution. You can have all these things are open to sensible conversations.
Yeah.
But the idea that you have a hard cap.
Yeah.
On the number of immigrants. Actually, this is one of David Cameron's most inglorious legacies, because he was the person that brought in this ludicrous idea that net migration should be under 100,000. Why?
Yeah.
Says who?
Totally arbitrary.
Completely arbitrary.
To please Paul bloody Dacre.
Economically illiterate.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, PJ, for your question. Hope I don't know whether you're going to agree with our answers, but thank you very much for the question. It's always good to have a debate about this stuff. Okay, next question, please.
Richard Tice intends to field Reform UK candidates, Reform UK being what Brexit Party became, in every English seat. And judging by the conversations I overhear in my Midlands red brick pub, people are gagging for this. Is this being overlooked by Westminster? Van driver Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Is that his real name?
I think it is.
Like Marvellous Marvin Hagler.
Andy's a regular. He's asked one before, I think.
I like it. Van Dry. Well, thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. I find it really hard to take Richard Tice seriously, but maybe I'm being naive. I found it hard to take Farrow seriously until he became serious.
I find Richard Tice a deeply ludicrous figure.
Yeah.
Compellingly so, actually. Yeah, I can't look away, which is an odd reaction. But what I wonder, two things actually. The first is whether Nigel Farage, when he returns from his jungle adventure, which I don't think is going that well actually, but anyway, seizes the reins. And the other thing was, which is just anecdotal, but I find Reform laughable. But I was talking to a Tory minister the other day and said that, you know, that I don't see the problem. And this person said, well, you have to remember how tightly geared the next election is.
Yes.
And reform only has to do quite well in a fairly small number of seats to cause the Tories enormous trouble.
Yeah.
So it could be a big story. And Andy's right that, you know, you ignore these things at your peril, because someone like Tice does come across as such a blowhard and an idiot. But actually, you know, one of the things that's happening is that the government's policy on, you know, it's marched everyone up to the top of the hill on Rwanda and stop the boats and all this, and that's unravelling in front of our eyes, which is exactly the opportunity that Reform UK has been waiting for.
Yeah, well, thanks, Andy. Let's have our next question. I listened to your podcast about fascism and expected you to mention the book by your esteemed colleague Paul Mason. Could you have him as a guest on the podcast, as this subject needs a lot more coverage? Maureen Smith. Thank you, Maureen, for that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Paul has written a brilliant...
It's a great book.
Yeah. What's it called? How to Stop Fascism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we serialised it in the New European.
Yes, you got a lot of coverage there. Yeah. So it was the opposite of a slight to Paul, who's one of my favourite writers. And it's a great book.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean,
Don't know, Paul is a regular weekly columnist
on the New European,
as is Matt D'Ancona, is Patience Wheatcroft and Alistair and Bonnie Greer and all these luminaries. And I have to say, Paul, I was delighted to get, I mean, I'm delighted to get all of those columnists. You know, every single one of them.
Oh, Paul's felt a like class a coup. Act.
And Paul was, every time I read his column, I don't always agree at all with the sentiment.
Well, that's the...
But he makes me think all the time.
Yeah, no, he's an incredibly informed and thoughtful and very good writer as well.
Brilliant writer, yeah.
And I think that any book by him, any column by him is worth...
Do you know how writing? I know he's really good?
Tell me.
Because the left-wing Corbynista loonies absolutely hate him.
Well, that's one of the reasons that, I mean, Paul is Paul is a socialist. Paul's a proper left-wing person.
Well-informed
but
socialist.
What he isn't is a member of a cult.
Yes, exactly right.
And therefore, everything you read by him is the product of thought and deliberation and conviction, and all the better for it.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we salute you, Paul Mason. And
thank you, Paul, for being you. Next question, please. How is the punishment of removing benefits going to work when job centres are desperately short of staff? And is it a human rights issue to remove benefits and prescriptions? That's from Carolyn French.
It's a very good question. And I think that there's a very good point that when job centres themselves are kind of struggling, as are courts and every other bit of the public estate, the whole business of getting this benefit system to work and to function, leaving aside actually just the questions of social justice, but just to work. I thought I, Daniel Blake, by the way, was one of the greatest films of recent years on the social fabric in this respect, because it showed that the real problem was that the system wasn't working.
That's
it was impossible to, and you know, you have people who are indigent, who can't get past websites, who can't get an appointment, who can't get their money in time to, you know, feed their children and so on.
And so
leading on to Carolyn's second question, is it a human rights issue to remove benefits and prescriptions? Self-evidently so. And I question whether that will ever actually happen.
Do you know, I grew up in the late 70s, early 80s in Liverpool. And of course, Boys from the Black Stuff was the nation's television.
Alan Bleasdale's
wonderful
gives
drama.
A job. Yossa.
Yossa Hughes gives a job. And the kind of, the absolute dire straits that whole swathes of communities found themselves in, trying to get through the system, you know?
Yes.
And you've seen since then, largely thanks, I think, to a very progressive Labour government from 97 onwards, you've seen huge improvements in how benefits, I mean, it's still complicated, it's still very screwed up and imperfect. But what you haven't seen is this kind of ritualized humiliation of people who couldn't get work for one reason or another. And you thought those days were long gone and well behind you, but they're coming back, I'm afraid. And there's something deeply nasty about the intent behind all of this,
it's
I feel.
It's the old Adam Serwer thing, the cruelty is the point.
Yes.
Which is one of the most depressing...
So heartbreaking.
..aspects of modern political culture.
Yeah.
I think a sub-note to this is that I'm increasingly coming to the view that digital technology is being used by government to ration, because it's so hard to get past some of these websites that you have to deal with if you're applying for any sort of government benefit or student loan or whatever it is, that in fact you do wonder, and it's pretty obvious that it's the case, that then they're being used to keep people at bay, and I particularly people who aren't digital natives.
Totally. I just wonder what kind of brain in Whitehall thinks that when we live in an age where we literally have something that we didn't have even in the 70s and 80s, food banks with people, endless queues of people who need to be supported just
and
to feed their family,
banks.
And fuel banks.
And the worst of all, the one that I find genuinely intolerable, baby banks.
Jeez.
So that you have to go, if you've got a newborn and you can't afford the basics, nappies, formula milk, whatever it might be, you go to a baby bank and they give it to you. Now, this is sort of something I suspect we will return to in months to come, but it seems to me that inequality is now becoming absolutely at the heart of political discourse, because there's something very badly wrong with a system where a lot of the benefit claimants we're talking about are in work. It's not just that they can't find work. There are millions of people who work a hard week's work and still don't have enough to put a roof over the head and to put food on the table.
Yeah.
Now, at that moment, I think the social contract begins to bend and break.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated to see, on the assumption that there is an incoming Labour government, we'll see, whether they really have taken stock of that.
So I was told, interestingly, by somebody in the know that Labour have been sending people over to Germany to speak to experts about how Germany deals with and dealt with the inequality between East and West in terms of living standards.
The ultimate levelling up.
Yeah. So I thought that was, there is an analogy to be drawn between the South and the North, and,
very much so.
I think, and it's of course, it's not as simple as that.
No.
Whole swathes of the North that are happy and affluent. But there's definitely lots and lots of places in this country where that social contract you're talking about is at snapping point, I think. And who would be surprised if, God forbid, but who would be surprised if this kind of cruel policies persevered and carried on for another 5 or 6 years? If there were riots in streets with people saying, I'm sorry, this is not working for us.
And, again, the argument from social justice is self-evident, but also if that's not enough, remember that when social contracts break, it's often the far right that benefits.
Of course, because they've got the easy answers.
They've got the easy populist
answers. And as my
friend
Ricardo Kirschbaum in Buenos Aires wrote the other day about Milei coming into power, the fear of today is stronger than the fear of the future.
Exactly.
And this is what politics has got to counter, is the fear of today, and to have bold, ambitious policies that counter that and give people hope and give leadership for people to know that the country is on a path somewhere better. That's all people want.
Well, that is the path that is now open to Starmer.
Yeah.
Because we've just had an autumn statement that cut taxes and cut benefits, essentially.
Yeah.
Offered the prospect of quite significant
benefit cuts. Yeah.
So that's them. That's them. That's the Conservatives. So with Starmer, I think we need to hear more about what on these really fundamental issues he thinks.
I couldn't agree more. But the good news with the Tories is that you get to keep the Elgin marbles. So happy days up in
Who needs food when
think
you've got
about
the Elgin
that
marbles.
While you're queuing in your food bank. Be grateful.
You might be hungry, but
you can see the
Elgin marbles
anytime.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Great. Like, moving on now to our last question.
So this comes from Robert in Highgate. Thank you, Robert. Do you agree with me that Elon Musk is now way too powerful? And if so, what can be done about it? Well, it's a timely question.
It certainly is. Well, I think Elon Musk is kind of self-regulating, isn't he?
Which means he's not regulating at all.
I mean, the answer is yes. Obviously, he's way too powerful, but he seems determined to screw it up for himself as best he can.
So we're recording this on in the wake of the news that he had just told his advertisers, some of whom have been boycotting him over his anti-Semitic tweets, to F off.
To go F themselves.
And when challenged on this, said, well, you know, the Earth, meaning the planet Earth, will judge whether it was my fault if X, yeah. i.e. Yeah. Twitter, fails. I mean, he's way too powerful. The idea that he goes to Israel to say he won't allow Gaza to have internet coverage from his Starlink system, just as he got involved in which bits of the Ukraine should have internet coverage. Yeah. This man, I mean, there have been few men in history more powerful.
That's true.
His wealth is just the beginning of it.
Would the world be a better place if X slash Twitter failed?
I think X slash Twitter is was the dumbest move he's ever made.
Yeah.
Because there he was with Tesla, which, you know, put electric cars back on the map in a serious way. And SpaceX, you know, some people think it's bonkers, but he has made it possible for, you know, the space race to continue, and also puts a lot of satellites up in space and does a lot of work.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah. So, you know, as much as he's clearly slightly away with the fairies with his weekly meetings on colonizing Mars. That in itself, it doesn't seem to me, is sort of harmful.
Yeah.
However, his belief that you can turn social media into an engineering problem is, I think we've tested that one to destruction.
It's when they go a step too far, don't they? They've got the answer to people.
Yes.
Because they understand people. And the truth is, they haven't got a bloody clue because they don't exist in real
And also, he's not only the world's wealthiest person, but also the world's most powerful troll. I mean, he cannot help himself.
Yeah.
And recently, I mean, some of the things he's been retweeting or tweeting have been anti-Semitic and horrendously so, and he's allowed a lot more people back onto the site who are polluting it, and of course the advertisers are fleeing. I mean, what did he expect? So I think it, I don't know if it'll be his undoing, but I suspect, I mean, that there is an argument that X Twitter collapses in the next few years.
Did you know, by the way, that they X Twitter are sending legal notes out to publications who just still call them Twitter, saying you must cease and desist, and we are now called X.
But that shows you his manic priorities. Yeah, crazy, he thinks that's the problem.
Isn't that mad?
You know, no. Yeah. I mean, he's a very, very, very strange man. I'm fascinating, yeah. but he is too powerful. And I don't know, Robert, what the answer is, because the problem is that he represents a technological breakthroughs at a speed that are going at a speed that regulators and legislators just cannot keep up with.
Yeah.
So I don't see his power diminishing anytime soon, is no. the honest answer.
Okay, well, let's hope he finds a way to use it for good, which would be nice, but he's not succeeding too well.
I think he should sell X stroke Twitter at a, you know, to someone who actually has an interest.
I think he should
in civic discourse
do the world a favor and shut the bloody thing down and let us all get
or just shut it down. I mean, you're one or the other, but I
think about some of the people that, if you think about, there are some people who are conspicuously noisy and relevant because of their enormous audiences.
Well,
on
there
Twitter.
Are one or two, aren't there?
We could all name
one or two.
And if you just removed their Twitter accounts, they'd just fizzle back to their non-entity status.
Yes, and then we'd just be
which
left
their
with
second-rate intellect deserves.
Instagram and drizzle lemon cakes and pictures of my really amazing holiday.
You could just listen to podcasts all day long.
Listen to podcasts, guys.
That'd be nice. Right, anyway, listen,
On
that very smug, hopeless note, we wish you a wonderful Sunday. Hope
have
you have
a great
day. And thank you to our production team, as ever, led by Ollie Peart and the wonderful Maya Siedlund, who I think is possibly the last time we'll say that name. I think she's off to new climbs. So
thank you, Maya.
Thank you for everything you've done, Maya. Get your feedback and your questions in to the two mats, that's the number 2, MATTS, at tnepublishing.com. Don't forget your wonderful opportunity to get Alistair Campbell's Diaries 2023 absolutely free when you sign up to the New European, which is jam-packed full of great journalism, ideas, thoughts, culture, art, politics, the lot. Thank you as ever for listening. Tune in next Friday when we're back with our regular show. And until then,
have a great week.
Have a great week. It's enjoy. Goodbye. Are we going to do the it's goodbye?
We don't do that.
Apparently we don't do that. Okay. Thank you. Have a great week.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.